What is it?
Sea eel, she replied. Electric.
Righto, we already know that, panted Cray. Not only electric, it's a damned lightning eel.
Cross, one by one, commanded Kirea the protectress, not taking her eyes off the water. Where there's one, there may be another.
A gift from the crabbers, I muttered, nervously stepping over the chute. I didn't want to get a lightning bolt between the legs.
Security barrier, nodded Kira. So we're on the right track.
Skin and meat, sighed the half-orc, stopping at the trough and scooping up his prey. Oh, electric iron, we'll need it. The skin will do well for a belt. Who knows how to sew straps? I sighed after a long pause. I guess there are no craftsmen among us. We aren't workers. We are white meat poured with blue blood.
You,
Kira winced, stepping over the gutter last. You aren't ever to be a romantic poet.
Next.
And once again we moved on. One featureless corridor after another. Stairs, hills, grills, and doors. And doors. I was starting not to like this monotony and inability to see more than a few meters ahead of me. My eyes were constantly in front of another moldy, mossy wall with wet streaks. And I wanted space to fly, and I want to fly. I want to fly. And then instead of flight, we had to get down on all fours and move forwards in this inelegant position. We passed at least six doors, very different ones, from rotten wood to fully metallic, complexly figured, with keyholes and without. Bomb almost died of a broken heart, because if a simple door could be burned or simply knocked over, the metal doors were too tough. The half-orc howled. His ears twitched. He gritted his teeth and stamped his feet. He demanded to address the problem of how do we open this damn door, and offered to call third-party experts, but his pleas were ignored coolly. If we had been in a different situation, I would have had a great desire to know what was behind the iron doors. There must be something, after all. The doors we had been able to open with kicks or fire were small cubicles in which there was some kind of reward. Mixed trash, barrels, broken boxes, rags, empty bags, and so on. But there was some interesting stuff. For example, in one of them were several unopened bottles of wine and a few elixirs. All of this Bomb immediately hid into his backpack, not really allowing us to see any of the trophies. But I didn't protest such quickness. Judging by the calm expressions of the rest of the group, Bomb did business honestly and didn't deprive anyone of snacks and money, and this is most important. In addition to the doors, we were faced with a growing number of gifts left by the crabbers, a few sea snakes writhing at the bottom of various pits filled with water in the gutters, even very small pools. They were strange creatures, tangles similar to brown algae and spitting venom, sea urchins with long needles, a couple of small stingrays and jellyfish which could paralyze at a single touch. How the marine animals survived in fresh water I had no idea. I knew there was an explanation. This was very strict in Valdira. That means something was added to the water, maybe a bag of sea salt or maybe some special potion. We escaped from all of these, beating them with minimal damage. One of Orbit's spirits was killed. I was shocked on my hand, which paralyzed my arm to the shoulder, and Orbit was fascinated by an iridescent rainbow jellyfish so much that we barely snapped him out of his state. Otherwise he would have just carried on sitting there. We did this simply. We simply killed the jellyfish, ridding him of the object of his fascination. This isn't an aquarium. What alarmed me? We still hadn't seen the crabbers, and this also greatly saddened me. I would much have preferred to meet these monsters by their lonesome, and now everything we were experiencing assured me that we would soon run into a whole troop of them. We barely got one, and if they attacked by the dozen, we would not stand up to even five marine aggressors, and if the boss is with them... Going ahead, Kira raised her clenched fist, and we dutifully froze.
The bog creature was about to say something, but his lips closed like an iron glove, sealing his slobbering mouth. Kira was clearly not joking. Another gesture, palm down, a few quiet words, and we quietly took a knee, extinguishing our fireflies. For a few seconds we were in darkness. I got to the girl and looked forward. 10 meters from us, the corridor ended abruptly, and then there was some kind of cave with a rock floor covered in puddles. Even further down I could see a few fires, flowing with blue light, which were apparently under the water. And there flashed grotesque shadows, twisting around the light. To our ears carried some kind of strange clicking, grinding, nasty crunching, and strange and melodic whistling. Everything was so natural that in the full immersion one experienced an indescribable mix of sensations. It seemed that we were truly at the mouth of the cave, where prehistoric monsters danced around the marsh fires. Something wild, frightening, and fascinating all at once. In the real world, one couldn't see this any longer. A dull gray metropolis, that was our destiny. For more vivid impressions, welcome to Valdira. Here, fantasies are guaranteed.
"What are we going to do?"
muttered Doc into my ear.
"What's the plan, boss?"
"Some kind of..." I muttered a response. "Oh, who the hell knows? I can't see anything but dancing shadows."
"But I see," hoarsely said Cray.
"And what do you see?"
"Two crabbers sitting around a blue campfire, and a whole bunch of strange creatures, most of which look like a sick nightmare. Guys, are dolphins able to leap from puddle to puddle on their fins whistling as they do it? Hell of a surprise."
"And?"
Kira started on the gnome. "What else do you see? No other crabbers, for sure?"
"I only see two." Cray shook his head. "Only more if they're under the water. I see a gigantic octopus eating something. Flying fish, I mean from puddle to puddle. Worms or snakes of some kind. Total darkness, in short. And are we going to attack this mess?"
"No, damn it," I grumbled. "Just take a look and go away."
"And how are we going to attack? They'll have different levels, all different bodies. Some crawl, some jump, some fly. My eyes will scatter."
"Scatter?" I chuckled.
"Cray, you obviously haven't lived in Valdira for long," chuckled Kira.
"I do not live here, I play here," retorted the dwarf.
"That's what I'm saying," she agreed. "You haven't been here long. Remember the main rule of attacking dens like this."
"Hmm? Hmm?"
"Only weight opposes weight," said the girl,
an apparently meaningless phrase to the uninitiated listeners.
"What? Huh? You're talking about..."
"Exactly," nodded Kira. "About massive battle spells. To clear the cluster by the mass. A sweet deal. To cut them down one by one is impossible."
"But we don't have these yet," I sighed bitterly. "At least I don't."
"Anything will do," said Kira, reaching into her waste bag. "Who has what? Damn it, Ross, next time explain the quest in more detail."
"How did I know?" I tried to defend myself, but then quieted and searched in my knapsack. "I cannot make excuses. I'm the leader. But I'm a leader low on resources. I don't want to beg for scrolls and finances from clans. Whatever we have thrown into the common fund, that's how we live." The bald elf put in some colored glass and even threw in a dog collar. Ugh. "Really, it's time to create a space in my personal room for items for all occasions, if only to find the money for such kits." The search took a total of 3 minutes. All threw their scrolls at me, and I grabbed them quickly, surprised at my agility. In the real world, I would have dropped at least half. And in the end, we were the proud owners of a wide variety of scrolls, which I began to view, at the same time saying the name of each scroll aloud, so all would know the magnitude of our potential arsenal. "Tss, fireball, 2 pieces. Unstable fireball, 1 piece. A joke. Ugh. Too bad that we have so few. Stone rain, 1 piece.
poisonous wave one piece? First time I'm hearing of this, but sounds interesting.
Keep reading,
said Kira, cheering with each title. Reading, I said. The String of Fate. What does that mean? Like in rock music, or...
Yes, said Kaelin. This is my scroll. I received it as a reward for a quest. One of these is String of Fire, and this is the one that's left. It's the highest form of the fire stream. If you activate it at floor level, I think it can get many of them.
Interesting, I chuckled, bringing my eyes to the following scroll. So, a lilac one, let's see. I am a slave, you're the boss. A 2-hour passphrase activation. What the hell? What kind of spell is this? And what's that, demoness for an hour? You'll feel yourself horned? What the actual hell is this? What kind of sorcery?
Oh, said Doc. This is mine. Sorry, I mistakenly gave it. This is personal.
Oh, I mused. Personal, well, here, horned one.
I'm not a goat, it's just, well, you know, guys, you understand, right?
Nah, Cray shook his head. This doesn't fly. Kaelin, move away from him, sweetheart.
And this man heals us, Kira sighed, struggling not to laugh. Don't even think about whipping me anymore, doctor.
And me, assented Kaelin.
How much can you sell them for?
Growled Baum, eagerly looking at the purple scrolls.
If you can't keep it, you have to sell it for good money. Give it here.
Damn, but with what kind of face am I going to sell this?
Fuck it, I do not care. Come on, I'm selling them.
No, I told you, it's private. Guys, don't think anything like that, wailed Doc. I'm normal. I just wanted something, you know, ethereal.
Venereal? I blurted out.
Ethereal. And everything is fine. It's not demon for an hour, after all. It's demoness. Oh.
Our doctor's hands were shaking so much that, even in the game, he managed to drop one of the scrolls. It floated gently down. 3 people rushed for the spinning paper, but the first one to it was the bald elf, who picked it up and joyfully muttered,
"Diphilotus pohabus, appear!"
And there it appeared. Now rip your ears off, damn balding elf, as though on purpose he read it all clearly and never stuttered once. In the dark corridor was an incredibly saturated bright pink flash, and there was a woman's moan of strictly erotic orientation, and when we blinked, we saw a demoness in front of us, meaning a woman, almost naked. A few sparse patches of black shiny leather revealed huge lush breasts, legs, capricious lips, sharp teeth, and a pair of small horns barely visible among the black and scarlet hair, and a long whip in her hand, wriggling predatorily and on its own. The erotic pull was so powerful that her aura probably covered more than half of the water drainage system. Certainly the population of monsters had sharply increased. Fuck!
Hi, smiled the demon happily. And what are you doing here, dressed? Undress.
Ross, don't look, Kira growled, her palm covering my bulging eyes and pushing them back into the eye sockets.
And don't you dare undress.
I wasn't going to.
Interesting, Orbit mused.
Damn, Baum and Cray said in chorus.
Interested, Cray?
Kaelin murmured angrily.
No, interesting in general, briskly said the dwarf, coming to his senses.
Baldy,
the demon cooed, stepping with swaying hips to the elf.
Baldy's me, barked Doc. Me!
Leave us, nasty one, waved the demon.
Well, the scroll was activated by the elf, and the succubus immediately got to action. The demoness didn't care about Doc.
Orbit, I hissed.
Eh?
Send her.
Where?
Wherever.
Okay,
sang the bald elf.
Go!
Where?
Wherever.
Where'd you say, Baldy?
To wherever.
Oh, that's what you call it, eh?
Voluptuously drawled the demon. Point with your hand, genius, I almost cried. Your hand.
Look out, Kira shouted, turning sharply. They're coming, a whole mass of them.
Looking towards the crabbers, I heavily swore we were being approached by a dark, rippling wave. Monster upon monster, in the midst of the wave, we could see two grim silhouettes. The enemy was coming, and we were dawdling foolishly. The enemies are coming, and one of the party members is about to get laid, and the doctor is drooling with envy.
Wherever is there?
The elf waved in the direction from whence we came.
Go there.
I will wait for you, promised the demoness.
She's going to leave,
yelled Doc, tearing at his hair.
Hit,
I howled, shoving a few scrolls to whoever I could reach. Poisonous wave.
Whoosh.
The corridor before me was filled with green liquid moving forwards, covering the advancing enemies.
String of fate!
Kaelin supported me, having fallen to her knees, holding the spell just above the floor. Only the namesake remained of the spell. I would call it something more of a laser razor, something very bright and flat, raced off with mind-boggling speed in the direction of the enemy. It sped off so quickly that it was ahead of the poisonous wave. In the next moment, many of the enemy troops simply disappeared, and lines about increased experience danced before my eyes. I think it wasn't only me. Bomb enthusiastically cursed at full volume. The vibrant, poisonous wave covered the ocean monsters, and we heard a belated squealing, squeaking, and furious cracking. But the enemy had not yet been defeated, only stunned. I activated the scroll, Unstable Fireball. It flared so hard that it seemed to me that I had spent a couple of seconds in a fiery hell. A giant balloon of fierce fire crashed into the ranks of the enemy and surged down the corridor, sweeping lumps of fire in all direction along with the spinning bodies of our enemies. When I saw the fish and squid bodies, I was more than happy. We were on the ground, after all, not in the middle of the ocean. But as the fire enveloped a giant dolphin, I was stabbed with a sense of guilt. I had a childhood love of these creatures. The dolphin was digital and evil-looking, but I had burned one just the same. Then the corridor was filled with swirling mists of darkness, completely hiding the monsters. The darkness was not a usual one. I didn't know what this combat spell was called, but when the fog dissipated, there was not a small monster left, and in the air hung a blurred image of a wickedly grinning skull. A particular impression, it could chill a particularly sensitive person to the bone. And right through the smoky image, we could see the two crabbers, utterly furious and battered, snapping their claws. Above the floor slipped the fiery string, and powerlessly strummed on the decorated bone caps on the knees of the monsters. This would not stop them. But looking at the approaching monsters, I didn't feel the slightest fear. Not just because it was a game, but because I was looking at the crabbers over the shoulders of the soldiers protecting us, and in my hands were magical flames of combat. Ice and fire, that's what I would treat the monsters with as soon as I had a chance. And soon I had a chance. I hit right on target. Coal and ice fragments flew into the chest armor of the crabbers. The spells broke through some of the armor. I could see a few holes in those places, stained as though with a corrosive acid. Making a small step forwards, Kirea the Protectress hit with her spear, and the crabber fell forwards with a strange melodious sound, getting hit in the injured knee. Its monster's head hit the floor with a thud, and Kray hit it with a smashing blow on the back of its head with an axe. The underwater monster turned over, pulled its legs under itself, but try as it might, couldn't stand up under the barrage of incessant hits, and died in this way. While Bomb and Kray finished off the fallen monster, Kira restrained the remaining one alone, taking all of its attacks on her clanking shield. Although Kira was in the front line, we did all we could to help her. Under the crabber appeared more and more stone spikes, and glowing embers and ice shards continually hit their target, and Orbit's spirits attacked the holes in its armor. A few more ghosts lazily crawled from the already fallen crabber and headed for the final enemy. Doc was also not sitting idle. The disgraced doctor was casting spells, healing the damage we incurred from rare hits. Before his death, in the last moments of his life, the crabber could still surprise us. As the stone peak raised from the floor, he put his hands in front of him and lunged forwards like a mad bull, equally strong and equally massive. From the wild strike, Kira was blown away like a feather, thrown back a few meters. Clad in armor, the massive paladin literally fell into Doc, and both of them tumbled to the floor. Kira lost about a quarter of her life, but Doc was burning red, stunned, and Kira lay on top of the skinny healer, literally squeezing the last drop of life out of Doc. Collapsing to my knees, I had a split second to shuffle my spells. Slowly, Doc's life began to recover, and Kira gently rolled to the side, freeing Doc of her body weight, and immediately rushing to her feet, rushed off to finish the crabber. A minute or two later, it was all over. Our unit had survived. Losses were limited to insignificant physical injuries and shot nerves. When Doc nearly died, my heart almost stopped. "An Agger is in our ranks," harshly informed Baum, nodding towards Kira. Only now I noticed that Kira's nickname was reddened. Peaceful emerald green disappeared, replaced by an aggressive red. The game had colored Kira, perceiving her as an aggressor, having inflicted a blow to her companion.
"Great," Kira muttered. "Well, good thing that I haven't yet sworn myself into any light temple."
"It happens," I reassured her. "You know."
"I know," said Kira. "The angels be damned."
A few tormenting seconds, and the nickname again lit up in green. I don't know exactly how the results are checked, but the unfair changing of a status is always corrected. If a unit is made up of newly acquainted players, when one of the party becomes red, he is immediately bombarded with numerous strikes, and the innocent man flies instantly to the revival location. It triggers the bear instincts. If you are red, you are an enemy. But in such a case, after a short letter to the administration, you are compensated for the loss of experience, your items are returned, and you receive a comforting reward. Thank all the gods of Valdira, this happens very rarely, and the system mainly works perfectly.
"I was about to get you in the forehead with my axe," Baum admitted, rubbing his forehead with his green hand.
"And I almost died," Doc chuckled. "I can only run from Aggers."
"I didn't see," sadly bellowed the bald elf. "Do it again."
"No thanks," snapped Kira.
"Baum, give me the spear."
"You've got one."
"I need two. Give it here. The durability of the first isn't eternal. And anyway, it'll be of use."
"I won't have anything to sell," the orc muttered resentfully,
and gave the spear with extreme reluctance to the paladin.
"So you are definitely just friends?"
asked Kaelin off subject, looking from me to Kira.
"What?
Yes, just friends," I lied, without even batting a digital eye.
"Then why did she cry, 'don't look,' like that?"
"Hmm."
"Because the hell are you staring at demonesses for?"
remarked Trouble, looking away to the side. And so it became immediately damn clear that we are not just friends. She sure doesn't know how to lie, she just doesn't know, fuck. Yeah, and we sure screwed up, too. We hadn't discussed beforehand. And now we were like school children, caught on the parents' couch.
"I leveled up!"
Doc happily exclaimed, abruptly changing the subject. My gratefulness to him was immediately rekindled.
"And me," growled Baum, "all to strength without hesitation, to punch harder and to have a thicker bag." "I'm almost there," sighed Cray.
And me," Kaelin Seeker nodded. "I am smarter and a bit wiser."
"Soon you will be completely cool."
Cray didn't miss the opportunity to cozy up to Kaelin. My own experience jumped and stood right at the edge. A millimeter more and I could consider the level obtained.
It's about time for me to gain a level and scatter the points in the appropriate columns. I would also like to become a bit smarter and wiser. Short break, I ordered. All accepted this well-needed relief. Cray stuck a stationary lamp with an ordinary light into the floor. Right, we hadn't met any zombies, vampires, or ghosts, so we would save the more expensive daylight fixtures. We were all seated around the light source, doing our own thing. Only the restless bomb scurried around, a fanatical rabid hamster collecting everything that came to hand. Fortunately, there was a lot to be collected. After the mass slaughter of the monsters, this was to be expected. Starting from scales and ending in absolutely fantastic trophies, such as gold-plated fins and eyeballs with protruding pupils and bone spikes. I saw lots of the like, a production having its home in a cabinet of curiosities. And as for the designers, it was about time that they visited psychiatrists and talked to them about the dangers of illicit drugs. Orbit somehow healed Nathan, and now, apparently, was trying to play a game of tic-tac-toe with him right on the stone corridor, as though he was doing all he could not to lose his mind. The Baroness promised to tell his story, and I frankly was dying of curiosity. He was too strange a character. I sat myself down, comfortably, threw Tyrant a hefty piece of jerky, and opened the window. It was time to make a choice between universal wisdom or a sharpening of the intellect. Against the background of open windows flashed an awkward shadow. Raising bleary eyes, I saw Orbit Cristallino. Eh?
Busia asks that you take her out of the block list, informed the bald elf.
Who? Oh, ooh, I drawled, opening a new window. A few seconds, and the Black Baroness was in my list of favorites, from whom I agreed to receive messages. The message did not take long. High Society invites the Honorable Mr. Rosgard to participate in a themed tea party. The event will take place tomorrow evening in the Sapphire Room of Barat Gadur at the confluence of the finest public, VIP class invitations, 8 pieces left at the hotel under the name of Mr. Rosgard. All costs for transporting those invited will be covered by the Sleepless Clan, and a large selection of themed costumes with complete anonymization. Fun and anonymous, that's our motto. Details on the reverse side of the invitations. Do not forget that each such invitation has a unique design and is a collector's item. With sincere respect, and hope for a positive response, Black Baroness, head of the Sleepless Clan. Damn it, I almost broke my eyes wading through the elaborate script and fancy language. Themed tea party? Superb public? VIP?
Who's Busia?
Asked Kira in an apparently neutral voice.
I told you about her, I sighed. She who suffers from insomnia?
Insomnia? Oh! The Baroness? Jumped Kaelin. And what does she want?
She invites me and my friends to a thematic tea party, I confessed, in the Blue Hall of Barat Gadur tomorrow night.
Ross, take me with you, please, said the combat mage. I don't even need a portion of the goods. Take me with you.
I hesitated. I am absolutely free tomorrow night, purred Kira, approaching me. Just wondering what I was going to do.
Wait, wait, I shouted. We, by the way, are right now standing in the gutter and are running around with crabbers. This isn't a tea party. Do you even need this tea party?
Yes,
chorused all but Orbit. The bald elf had nothing to worry about. He could enter and leave the citadel whenever he wanted. It's the rest of us who have to swallow tablets at the sight of Barat Gadur.
There are such great books, added Doc. I can spend my life reading.
Communication with the Legends, Kaelin rolled her eyes in ecstasy. Half of the players are legendary and have soul plane ratings.
There are so many things, sheepishly admitted Baum,
and they give a lot. Last time, I got some boots. Worldly people, generous.
I love theme nights.
Kirea didn't keep silent.
Ross, I have never asked you for anything, boomed the gnome. Give me an invitation.
Well, yes, he wanted to be wherever his beloved Kaelin was. Okay, I gave up. I don't mind. Go and play, my children, but after we maim the crabbers.
I'll maim them all myself right now,
ominously promised Kaelin, clenching a scarlet flame in her fists. For the invitations.
All right, all right, I waved my hands. Don't get too relaxed. In a few minutes we stand. I think we are very close to their lair.
All were silenced, and I took a deep breath of relief. Themed tea party. I wouldn't be myself if this themed party was connected to the sea voyage. After all, the upcoming trip was the most fashionable topic of the season, and obviously the tea party will be attended by a number of people who, in one way or another, were connected with the Sleepless, one way or another. After the official part, they would firmly take me. I'd have to take Kira. Without a mate, I had nothing to do there. Or should I rather forget it and not go? Let the comrades enjoy, and I will run around the wasteland and chop monsters? The options aren't rich. The last stop before the final battle we made after another 40-odd minutes, and most of this marathon was run in knee-deep dirty water, moving from one rocky island to another. I never thought that the sewage of Algora was so huge, I couldn't have imagined it. We overcame kilometers, entire leagues under the earth. We saw all kinds of monsters, all kinds of plants. Downright lost world right underground. Oppressive on the psyche like a monstrous anvil. But everything comes to an end. And now we lay quietly in the water, between jagged fragments of rock. Lay there and stared forwards and down. In fact, we were on the very edge of a deep decline, most similar to the crater of a bomb. There, along the mud, swarmed a whole army of monsters, continuously conducting their awful dance around five crabbers frozen in complete immobility. And above it all hung a green ball, exuding a fairly bright but ghostly light. All of our attention was at first dispersed throughout the area, but eventually concentrated on the center of the mud pit, where a large stone chip was sticking out, surging a couple of meters above the mud. And on this very fragment, as though upon a throne, was majestically perched a disgusting giant crabber. On his carapace were painted a myriad of patterns and bizarre characters, his shoulders painted silver. It looked like the uniform of an officer. His pincers also were painted in gold and silver colors, striped. Overall, at the mere sight of this animal, the impression was that he was not a simple soldier of the crabber army, more like a general who, for some reason, appeared to be at the head of a very small group. But the central figure of the leader soon lost its significance for us, because we had made a mistake. It wasn't a temporary camp for the crabbers, and not even a permanent one. The crabbers worked here. We only had to look a little closer for it to become clear that the seemingly senseless fuss in the mud had a deeper meaning. All this spinning, crawling, and jumping creatures quite intelligently swarmed in the mud slush, gradually pushing it from the center to the edges, where it flowed into the narrow gap and went on, carried away by the sewage system of Algora. They used all that was available, fins, snouts, whole bodies, and other appendages. To put it bluntly, we were watching a very slow and inside-out mud swirl. Waves of mud flowed slowly from the center to the edges, and this cycle continued repeatedly. The crabbers were not just basking in the mud. They watched as their dependents carefully deepened the hole, sinking deeper and deeper. We all saw it, but the answer to the main question was yet unknown. Why were the crabbers doing it? Something they were looking for, undoubtedly. But then, what exactly are they looking for with such diligence? It could be anything.
Digging their own graves,
whispered Bomb bloodthirstily, lying in a crevice and masquerading with patches of moss, downright spitting image of a moss-covered boulder. "Or ours," I said softly. "What a crowd." "Kirea."
"One second,"
replied my miracle, disguised as a mound of mud. "I'm analyzing. Do not distract." I didn't bother her any more, returning to the contemplation of the mud monsters. I couldn't bear the huge combat experience which Kira possessed in matters of fighting tactics and teamwork. I've always been a loner. But Kira participated in these wars, perhaps led whole regiments into attack, not to mention sieges. That's why I didn't dare to stop her from analyzing. Let her think. Maybe she'll think of something or other. And I will continue to watch over the freaks. However, there was nothing to watch, really, other than the crabbers, because of all the mud. Every swarming creature in the mire was plastered with a thick layer of black mud. I couldn't identify them past the vague contours of their bodies along with the inscriptions. Many thin snake bodies slid on the mud slush and left slowly vanishing, winding trails, something like a very fat penguin. And there is something similar to a seal, with a very long horn on its forehead. What a combo. There were a couple of giant crabs, deftly moving in the mud, downright living excavators, for whom it was easy to tear out clumps of dirt from the ground. Black dungeon, black hole, black mud, and black monsters, just asking for the phrase, black archaeologists, and it seemed that the phrase fell right on target. The crabbers really were engaging in excavations in search of something very important to them.
"So," livened Kira, "things are bad. This crowd, of course, will maul us, even before we get to the crabbers. There are too many of them."
"You always know how to reassure me," I smiled bleakly. "Retreat, after all we have overcome? Fail the task, or go back for help, and wander back for many kilometers underground?"
"Therefore, if we want to survive, we have to act very smartly," she continued, wiping the running dirt off her cheek. "Listen carefully. The monsters are heterogeneous, completely. Their sizes, silhouettes, adaptability of land, survival, speed, and so on. The most important factor is their fatigue. Did you see how often certain groups stop digging and freeze for a few minutes?"
No, I said with hesitation. The rest of the party members just shook their heads.
"Right," sighed Kirea. "You probably haven't even divided them into groups, have you? Just see a bunch of monsters, right?"
"Uh-huh," cheerfully nodded Bomb. "That's right. A monster mash in the dirt."
"This is the main problem, guys," once again Kira sighed. "So these groups stop at certain times, but sometimes the time corresponds. At this point, we have to hit with the remaining mass from a distance and continue to fire with all the long-range arsenal we have. And this has to be done before they finally stop digging. You understand why they sometimes stop?"
"Fatigue?" I suggested first, guessing.
"Uh-huh. Fatigue. Their endurance is not unlimited. They also run out of steam as we do. This is their weakest point. I made a battle plan. I'll describe it now."
"Are you a colonel in the real world?" muttered Cray, dumbfounded.
"I am not," chuckled the girl. "Just game experience. Listen, I calculated the intervals between stops and periods when these intervals are the same. Somewhere at 7.5 minutes is the biggest stop. Just 3 groups will freeze. It is about 60% of the total opponents. What's more delicious, it is the most numerous group. In this very moment, we strike when the enemy is exhausted. This will give many advantages. The first, they cannot go on the offensive. Second, they will not be able to maneuver and evade, which will allow our massive hit to the target with 100% accuracy. The third, that of the enemies who still have mobility, most of them will have to attack from the bottom up, moving on a slippery and quite steep slope. Fourth, the element of surprise is in our favor. Fifth, our group has obstacle spells, such as thorny wall and stone peaks. This will further slow down the enemy. Sixth, the commander will not be able to use all available troops because they will be stunned, disoriented, and exhausted. Thus, we will have every chance to destroy all the small fry before the soldiers cross the distance and attack in melee combat. I estimate that our chances are pretty high, provided that all will go smoothly, on time, and that no one does anything silly. All clear?
The answer was a stunned silence. I kept a hard and stony expression with difficulty. Such a detailed plan I hadn't heard before.
Clear? Squeezed Doc. This... Kureya, do you need work in the real world by chance? I can arrange it. A good post, good money. I already have a job, said Kira with a cute smile. I look after this one nut job. So, you already understand what our strategy will involve. We now turn to the tactics. The current position is quite comfortable, but Bomb and Cray, immediately after the attack begins, will have to move forward a couple of meters and join with me in a single bundle. Doc will stand just behind us. Doc, as soon as the attack is launched, immediately start up all the auras that you have. Ross, Orbit, and Kalen are behind. Classics, proven experience. We will use all the masses that we've got, all completely, from the very powerful to the lowest ranking. The most important task? To inflict maximum damage to the enemy at the first attack. We won't get a second chance. Let's get to it, warriors. Mages, do not forget your mana potions. Anyone who has strengthening potions, drink them immediately after the outbreak of hostilities. Ridiculous, I muttered, barely audible. Kitten turned saber-toothed tiger, and I stroked its fur. You don't like something? Inquired Kira just as quietly, hearing only my mumbling. What are you saying? I whispered, just admiring aloud. Well, well, Kira chuckled and added louder. 2 minutes to the hour of reckoning. A short movement of the hand, and a set of bubbles of various shapes and sizes appeared before the paladin. I could identify 6 bottles in total, most looking like an assortment of combat grenades. Inside, piercing blue liquid bubbles, and on the label was a volumetric cloud explosion, scattering debris. Explosive potions. Probably the same as those used by Vlas when he was chasing mountain trolls sitting astride a griffin. The last word of the negotiations, Kira informed me, catching my interested gaze. Hell of negotiations you have, I snorted, taking a poorer assortment out of my bag. Mana potions, essentially. The energy I'm going to need first and foremost. Soldiers should gather as many stones as possible. Kira continued to command, completely absorbed in the details of the future fight. Not the small ones. Get the big and hefty ones. The larger the stone, the greater the chance the enemy will be knocked down off their feet, or from their fins or tentacles. Damn, collect rocks is what I mean to say. That's what we meet them with when they break through the magic barriers. Doc, gather all the fireflies and pillars. Once I say, just put them all on without exception, let it be bright and hot. Better for us, and for the enemies, not so much. Less aim, nothing they can really see. All they will see are the tears in their own narrowed eyes.
Beautifully said.
What is the most surprising? We all unconditionally obeyed Kira. No one objected, and no one offered their own variants or discussed an already existing plan of action. But in our group there is no established hierarchy. Formally, I am a leader, but I never put myself above others. Kira does the same. They all listen to her, even though she is the newest member of the team. Once again, I was convinced that she is a real paladin in class and spirit. A leader wrapped in a radiant aura. A few more minutes passed, occupied by hasty preparation. After waiting 20 seconds and peering at the monsters, Kira abruptly straightened to her full height, throwing off mud from her shining armor, and said in her full voice, "Let's go!" 2 explosive potions sped at a shallow arc to the center of the pit. Even before they fell, the air rustled with a new pair of bombs, this time directed at different points within the pit.
Not lagging behind, I put up a hand and snapped, "Fireball!" A buzzing clot of flame broke from my hand and carried straight to the bottom of the pit, crawling with monsters.
"Fireball!"
Kaelin supported me. "Clot of poison!" Beside me flew another fireball and a drop of viscous green liquid.
"Stone chicken haunch!"
growled the bald elf, throwing a common stone at the enemy. From this spell I almost stopped short. In an instant the mud pit turned into a geyser. Here and there rose fountains of sticky mud and stone and bodies of the opponents. Fireballs cut into cohesive groups. A raging fire was added to the fountain, and we continued to generously spend the whole meager supply of scrolls, wasting them with nothing remaining, mercilessly seeking out the greatest accumulations of creatures.
"Stone rain! Cloud of smoke!"
chattered the combat mage like clockwork, dust from spent scrolls falling on the ground. Something thundered, and showers of stones swept over the pit. Squealing, whistling, and squeaking monsters were driven into the mud. An ashen cloud muddied the pit, blinding and confusing the enemy. And it didn't stop us. We could see the contours of the pit, and didn't need anything else. Hit in the center, and you can't go wrong. In the smoky haze was a second crash. The last of the explosive potions showed itself in all its glory. Before my eyes ran an endless list of accomplishments, flashed fancy names of slain monsters, and the joyful and long-awaited message, "You got a new level!" The effect feel like the Terminator. He too had a flow of information when he looked at the enemy. Here we have the same thing, only 10 times the amount. Each line a slain monster. And there were already dozens of these lines. The creatures were dying in batches, and we had not even budged. Left without scrolls, I held up a hand, and somewhere amid the raging mud and smoke rose 2 walls of thorn, thorny and bothersome. I didn't stop there, but continued to plant a maze of thorny bushes. Mana went down like a bottomless pit, but I wasn't bothered. More thorns, more prickles, more plant walls, more cheery white flowers, the flowers on their tombs.
"Stone peaks!"
Kaelin Seeker joined in on the slaughter, scorching immediately with both hands.
"Peaks! Peaks! Peaks! Peaks!"
"Booby!"
Orbit yelled, throwing the enemy another stone. Several places in the smoke screen thinned, and several monsters lunged in our direction. Here was the first wave.
"Ignore!"
loudly shouted Kira.
"Continue to beat the center with all you've got. There is a whole artillery left there. Soldiers, throw rocks at the nearest ones."
"Hit the seals!"
yelled Bomb, raising a stone the size of a cow with some effort.
"Go!"
With a split-second delay, Cray sent down his impressive gift. Bending down, I picked up a mana bottle from the dirt and sucked it down, replenishing my energy. With an oblique look down, I saw the moment when the rock covered the most zealous enemies. It covered them and rolled on, crushing those in its way. I continued at double speed, planting thorns persistently at the center of the mud pit.
"Ross, cut the first line of freaks!"
Kira commanded, and I dismissed the sight below and landed thorn walls directly among exhausted and wounded monsters. After that I swallowed 2 mana potions at once while shuffling spells and infusing coals into my right hand. Soon the time will come for close-range combat.
"Kaelin, now you!"
The fighting sorceress shouted something and clearly waved her hands. A cheeky resident of the ocean depths, something between a fur seal and a bulldog, was planted on a jagged rock peak and was killed. In the place of his death, other enemies immediately went forward. We had seen a picture of the battle only in fragments. Lines of experience continued to run and run. There's lesser creatures who continued to die. Tiny snakes, worms, fish, and other incredible creatures. And we didn't even notice them among the bubbling and almost boiling mud. And we hadn't yet seen the owners themselves. The crabbers. Where are those damn overgrown crabs?
"Fire onto the first rows,"
Kira ordered, at the same time sending down several stones. In the next 15 seconds I incessantly burned, set up walls and coal to anyone who came near, at the same time trying not to interfere with Kalin's fire and evenly disperse the combat magic on all rows. It worked out well. Enemies were hit with spikes and stone peaks, knocked down with stones and burned coals. The gnarled mess of mud continued, and the tumbling and hobbling creatures howled, as in a nightmare. Nothing to say about my hearing. Personally, it had long shut down, reacting only to the voices of my people. Enemies didn't want to die in silence. Each of the perishing monsters contributed to the noise, which didn't make anything better.
"There they come," said Kalin with a nervous voice.
"Three," supported Cray, who had great eyesight. "Closing and opening the claws, what freaks! Light, Doc."
"Doc? Oh, yes. Light. I had completely forgotten. And now, above our heads, shone bright and spotless magic. We were bathed in light, drowning in it, but we continued to see the enemy clearly. But the enemy, unlike us, could see nothing. They were literally going into the light, and they could no longer see anything, only light and nothing more. Usually light means salvation, the exit, and in our case the light meant death. They went to die, like moths that flock to the beckoning light bulb.
"Wizards, open fire on the crabbers! Orbit, ghosts to the first wave of the enemy, go!"
Our hands in sync, Kalin and I set our sights on the menacing silhouettes of the crabbers. I took the stone wall from my hand and placed shards in its place, and fiery flashes blossomed on the chest of the barbarian. The crabber staggered, he stumbled, but stubbornly stepped forward, moving all four legs and getting closer to us with each step. And I had thought myself to be a Terminator. I had made a mistake. These are the Terminators coming straight towards us now, taking the magic strikes, but stubbornly ignoring them. After him, covered by his body, stepped two more body monsters. And one was truly bad. It was limping on three legs. The fourth dragged on helplessly through the mud. Another had a deep rift in his chest armor. And two more I had not seen. They weren't there. Where are these things? Where is the leader? Running away? Bypassing them? Laying down in a shelter?
"What is this crap?" boomed Cray dumbfoundedly, lifting up his head.
There, under the dark vault of the case, a snow-white figure of an Amrita, or angel, hung in the air, a golden halo over his head. The angels came to us.
"Let him hang there, let them watch," Kira shouted, raising a spear to throw. "Don't even think about shooting it."
"Interesting, after all," disappointedly said Orbit, calling one of his spirits away from the angel.
An angel had come to the carnage, and the bloody bald elf nearly struck it. That would have been fun. A second, and the white figure in an iridescent haze disappeared. The angel left us. Why did he come? Who knows? But he cannot intervene. Gameplay is holy. So, fie on the angels. Hit the crabbers. Though I was distracted, my hands continued to move automatically. Each palm was charged with combat spells. The crabber staggered, his legs buckled, and he fell heavily into the mud. He was still alive, trying to rise, but the magic beat on him continuously into the mud, ripping off pieces of armor and leaving scorch marks. We were merciless. The two battle mages achieved their effect, and the crabber groaned, collapsed flat, and stopped moving. And yet he was not dead yet. They are very tenacious. The creature will rise if we allow it.
First row!
Once again we changed the fire, shuffling spells. Once again monsters were covered with thorny bushes and jagged spikes. Again I swallowed mana potions. And soldiers swallowed enhancing potions too, ready to meet the enemy with swords and axes. I acted like an automaton, moving jerkily and choosing the target on a whim. Before my eyes flashed disparate fragments. A snake, crawling in the mud, attacked by the screeching Nathaniel, numerous paws digging into its eyes and neck.
A stone flew like a rugby ball into the nose of the overgrown seal, knocking it back right into the thorn wall. Good work, Bom. Another ghost covered two moray eels with its body, covered them, lit up, and then scattered into wisps of fog. And Orbit was shattered, his life jumping down. The vigilant Doc stopped throwing small stones and rushed to the victim. The bald elf, wiping away tears of sorrow, had already summoned another specter. With an angry growl, Tyrant caught a slug and pulled him like a rag. He threw aside the limp opponent and began with the next one, a tiny water snake sliding through the mud. Kira leaned her body forward and threw the last spear, piercing through the body of a monster similar to tangled seaweed. A wail of panic came from the bog creature, hiding in a deep crevice. The creature was in a wild panic, but now we weren't going to focus on his feelings. Kaylin fell on her knees and with both hands sent a fan of coals at the approaching monster. Her face distorted, she bit her lower lip, and her eyes splashed with wild excitement. Either we had them or they had us. Cray thrust the axe at the ground, killing several small but certainly poisonous snakes. Doc rushed to the dwarf, noting that his life jumped down a little. A snake had still managed to get him.
"Good. Now on to the crabbers, all except me, Bom, and Cray. It's time to kill the freaks. This is our land," loudly shouted Kirea the Protectress, brandishing her sword in the air.
"This isn't our land," I shouted back.
It looks like Kira forgot, remembered the old days when the clan defended their lands. So that's how she inspired her colleagues, truly a paladin. And how did that fool Gasha send such a fighter to rebirth?
"I blurted out of habit. Hit them anyway."
"Hitting, hitting,"
I gasped, stepping a few paces back. The magician doesn't like close range, and it was getting closer, but the enemies were less. The meat chopper we had launched didn't reduce speed, but the meat was coming to an end.
"Level!"
triumphantly yelled Doc.
"One more, yes!"
We had lumped some experience together. Others would go up soon, too. And I, as leader, cannot help but rejoice.
"Two more!"
Cray yelled hoarsely, knocking a strange creature off his leg which looked like a hairy jellyfish.
"Boss!"
"Now it's gonna be fun," I yelled back, looking at the boldly striding fresh crabbers coming towards us. The leader was on the move, the one who was gilded and silvered. That's all I could see, the monstrous claw, while the shoulders and chest were only shreds of former glory. Our first attacks were still effective, and, judging by the abundant streaks of dirt on his armor, it's possible we buried him briefly. Oh, and we drove him off his throne for sure, face right in the dirt, from the throne right to the grave. I would be offended, too.
"Full speed ahead!"
loudly yelled Kira, wielding a sword and shield.
"Before they arrive, we have to finish all the rest, including the ordinary crabbers. Ross, focus on the leader. We'll take care of the rest."
"Yes, ma'am,"
I foolishly slurred, swallowing mana. And again we began. According to calculations, there were no more than 3 or 4 dozen left alive. Some could already be safely written off. And one of the crabbers kissed the ground, and 2 others were mutilated and burned. The main danger was the last pair of furious barbarians. Looking at the way my flaming coals harmlessly bounced off the chest plate of the leader, I was seriously worried. I couldn't really inflict any damage on this hulk. I felt like a teenager with a slingshot against a tank. Not only I understood this, but also our paladin.
"Warriors, get ready to rumble. 15 seconds of attack and we retreat immediately. On my order. Orbit, take back the ghosts," Kira shouted, pulling out the waste bag of pure ice parchment. "The last trump card. Ice."
The white scroll shattered into 1,000 tiny snowflakes, and a miniature snowfall rushed to the ground, and the field of battle before us was covered with ice.
Puddles of water were frozen completely, all living things instantaneously froze into ice sculptures, and either perished or were left unable to move. The crabbers froze too, turned into ice.
"Attack!"
said Kira with a rallying cry, and rushed forwards, dragging the rest of the soldiers with her. Kaelin turned exclusively to stone peaks, which was reasonable. It was unwise to use fire. On the ice slid the ghosts of the elf, hugging